Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Alpharetta, Georgia, it's time for Alpharetta Business Radio, spotlighting the area's best businesses and the people who lead them.
We have in the studio with us three people. We have two ladies from Girl Friday, Teresa Windham and Victoria Hunter, and they will talk to you about a lot of great things they do to help businesses handle their paperwork and their overload and all the things that you don't get done, like QuickBooks and filing and all that sort of thing. So they have a wide range of services. You're going to hear about that. You'll also want to talk to Randy Lucas, who is our other guest in the studio, who is with TurkNet Leadership Group. He's a PhD and an industrial psychologist. So, for my benefit, Randy, please keep it really simple.
I'll try my best.
Use small words.
No problem.
Okay, let's get started then. Randy, you're an industrial psychologist, and why don't you tell us what an industrial psychologist is, and how is that different from the guys that have long beards, which you don't have, and look like Sigmund Freud, and ask you about your childhood.
Happy to explain that, Chris. And actually, the field is called industrial/organizational psychology, which is strange. It's probably one of the only professions out there that has a slash in the name of it. And people often wonder, why is that, and what are both sides all about? So the field started about 100 years ago, kind of spun off industrial engineering and some related fields, looking at how people can be more productive and maximizing principles of behavior to improve both productivity and morale. And in a sense, in a nutshell, that is what industrial organizational psychology is all about. On the I side of the field, we concentrate on things like what are the critical responsibilities of a given position and how do we maximize effectiveness of someone in those responsibilities through design of the job, through maximizing their environment so that they can be as efficient as possible. Actually started with Frederick Taylor many years ago, who studied people in the railroad industry. Shoveling coal and how to maximize that productivity. And so there's a lot of similarities, as I said.
The people I worked for always said, give them a bigger shovel.
Yeah, and that could have been one of Frederick Taylor's findings. But the field has progressed a lot since then. And organizational psychology, I think, is a result of that, because people are not robots. And when they go into the world of work, especially today, they need to feel like they're a part of something. They want to be fulfilling a purpose that makes them feel really important. It helps them with their motivation. And motivation, morale, that's critical, especially now, because businesses are more complex and requires a lot more than just, like I said earlier, a robot. So that's where the organizational part comes in, where we help organizations with getting people to work together better as part of a team, working with leaders, improving their leadership effectiveness, helping organizations select employees that are a good fit for the position, both in terms of what's required of that job as well as what is the culture of that environment. And there's a broad spectrum of other things. But in a nutshell, that is what industrial and organizational psychology is, leveraging principles of behavior to maximize productivity and morale.
You probably have seen a lot of people do a lot of things the very worst way possible, and I'm sure you've got some great stories. Would you care to share a couple of those with us?
Oh, sure. I got lots of stories. I'll share one with you that's somewhat recent, one of my success stories that I'm kind of proud of. We worked with an organization, the entire organization. They were wanting to change the culture to be more what they called consumer-focused, which really involved things like being more creative, being more innovative, allowing people to think outside of the box and try new things. And this organization, it had a lot of great things going for it, but some of the key challenges were that it was too bureaucratic, too used to its way of doing things, and just really slow to adapt or accept change. So they brought us in to see what we could do to help. We started by talking to people, interviewing random sample of people across multiple levels within the organization, understand what's going well, what could be improved. Do you do these type of things that we had identified in advance as being important for being a consumer-driven culture, being more creative, being more innovative, things like that? From there, we then put together a survey, and we administered it to the entire workforce. This was an organization of about 400 or 500, a good-sized organization. And from there, we identified key strengths as well as some areas for growth and some things that they needed to work on if they were going to execute this strategy of being more consumer-focused. So from that, we then worked with the senior leadership team, and we identified two key things. One, senior leadership needed some coaching and development themselves to be this leader that was required of this new type of culture and organization. Two, they needed training in change, how to handle change, how to accept change, how to manage change, and how to get others. Many people don't like change. We are programmed to be as efficient as possible and only change when absolutely necessary. We are creatures of habit, and as much as possible, we like to work in autopilot. I understand that. Many organizations have to deal with that. So we put together a program for the leaders where we coach them, and this client was remote, so we had to do a lot of our coaching virtually. But with the internet and all kinds of great software tools that are out there, that was really pretty easy to do.
So tell me a little bit about how you work with an executive. I mean, your executives usually say the problem is down there, not up here. clearly couldn't be me. How do you work with an executive or the executive suite and coach them to have a different philosophy of management and how to help push change down into their organization the right way?
Yeah, great question. A lot of what we do in my organization, which is the TurkNet Leadership Group, is executive coaching. So how do we get these leaders to accept change and that they need to grow? Well, a lot of the leaders, fortunately, that we work with, they want to improve. I mean, that competitive spirit that got them to where they are is what's driving them to us. When they come for coaching, they want to get even better than they already are. A lot of individuals we work with are high potential, is what we call them. So to get them to identify where their areas for growth are, we start out with a lot of different assessments. We use personality assessments. We use what's called a 360 assessment, where we ask their subordinates, their peers, their boss, maybe even their customers, what do you think of this person? We have them fill out a formal survey that rates the individual on a number of different skills important for leadership. From there, we look at all that information. We go over it with the person being coached, and then we work with them to identify a plan for development, and like you opened with, sometimes it's being overly confident. A good leader really balances humility with self-confidence. And I've seen just the opposite. I've seen plenty of leaders that were too humble and didn't have enough self-confidence. So I've seen the broad spectrum of possibilities within leaders. But we help them identify where are their key areas for growth, what are their people saying about them, put together a plan for development, and then we work with them on these new behaviors that they have decided themselves to commit to. And then we follow up every 3 to 5 weeks or so, typically for a 4 to 6 month period of time, sometimes a bit longer. And as long as they're committed and they have an open mind and an open heart, we usually see great results.
Do you find people that are that are surprised by what the 360 surveys are telling them?
Oh yeah, all the time. There's often surprises that come up. Nobody is perfect. I have yet to meet the perfect executive, the perfect person. I mean, we are all fallible human beings, as my boss, Bob Turknet, would say, and we all have areas for growth and improvement. So, there's usually one or two things that come as a bit of a surprise to them, but we work through that. And it's a long-term engagement when you're doing executive coaching, because you really need to build a relationship based on trust with that person and really let them know that you're acting in their best interest. And once you can do that, you can deliver some of that hard feedback and get them to accept it so that they can move on and improve and be an even stronger leader than they may already be.
So Pogo was right. We've met the enemy in the ERS.
That's true. Sometimes it is that case. That is the case, yes.
The executives that are resistant to this, you know, what underlies the great resistance to people to making changes? Is it their beliefs, or what is it that keeps them stuck in the rut they're in?
Well, sometimes it's being overly self-confident, being so confident in yourself that it crosses the line into what some would call arrogance. Or so forth. Sometimes it's because they've been reinforced for the wrong things for way too long. You know, they may have been very effective at sales. And because they brought in so much money to the organization, the leaders were willing to look the other way. But sooner or later, you have to pay the piper. Those issues that you've been ignoring come to a head. And as the person rises up, what the company is inadvertently saying is that, oh, you're doing just fine. That's exactly what we want. We want you to yell and scream at people. We want you to belittle others, for example, when really that's not the case. And you can't put someone like that into a leadership position. Yet many organizations, if you want to improve and go further in your career, what is the next logical step? To become a leader of that organization. But being a leader is a different job than being, in this example, a salesperson. It's a different job description, different skills, different abilities. So that is oftentimes what occurs.
How is it that so many maladjusted, near sociopaths end up running large companies?
Well,
do they look different to the board than they do to the people that are working for them?
Oh, sure. And keep in mind, I still believe that this is the minority, what we're talking about here, not the majority. Most individuals out there that we work with, they want to improve and grow and get better. They are driven, and they want to be even more successful. But absolutely, there are those cases out there, like you describe, where people have some real challenges, and part of it is because they are ignored, and sometimes they're just really good at covering it up. They're really good actors. They know how to put on that other persona when they need to and pull the wool over people's eyes. So between that and people just willing to deal with their shortcomings because they're doing so well in their area of expertise.
They're making money.
They're making money. They're willing to overlook that. But again, it comes to a point where you can't ignore that anymore because leaders have a ripple effect on the entire organization. The culture of any organization starts with its leaders. The strategy of that organization ultimately comes from its leaders. So if you have one or two leaders that are kind of a poison, it can really have a ripple effect that can be very detrimental to the entire organization.
Very interesting field of human psychology. I'm sure it's very different than the kind of on the couch kind of thing that people think of when you say psychology.
Right. Yeah, you did ask me that earlier, didn't you? And we don't typically cross that line into psychopathy. Sorry, that's a big word, I know, but people that have some kind of serious issues, and we have to be very careful of that as industrial organizational psychologists, because oftentimes when you're coaching someone, personal issues often rise to the surface, and when we are over our head, so to speak, as an IO psychologist, it's important for us to recognize that and to refer the person to someone else that has more of a clinical training and background. So luckily at TurkNet, we have a blend of both IO psychologists and clinical psychologists. So we have the personnel to treat each individual according to where their needs are.
So if you have somebody that does have some real personal psychological problems, you have professionals on staff that you can easily hook them up with, refer them to help them over whatever that hurdle is.
That is correct. That is correct. And as a licensed psychologist, meaning that I had to go through a certification process with the state, I'm very, very sensitive to that. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Interestingly, there are a lot of people showing up in the business field today who are business coaches and executive coaches, and I mean, there are a lot of those people out there. There seems to be a huge interest in this field for some reason. It's grown up probably in about the last 6 or 7 years.
Right.
What's behind that? What's the difference between kind of what they do and what you do?
Yeah, great question. There was a recent article that came out in Harvard Business Review that showed, and I kind of alluded to it earlier, that in over 40% of the cases when you're working with a coach, issues that start out as business issues transform into personal issues, or they get kind of blended. There's many coaches out there that don't have an appreciation for psychology and don't have the background that I do. And there's many people that just decide, oh, I'm going to be a coach. And they get the business cards printed up, and Monday they're a coach. Here we go. Yeah, that's right. But it's kind of scary to me because I see so many instances where there's some serious issues coming up in a coaching relationship. And you can't really have those breakthroughs unless you have that background in psychology. I think some people are attracted to those kind of coaches because they think of a psychologist. They think of Freud, like you mentioned earlier. But I don't ask people about their childhood. I don't go into that. I hope you had a great childhood, but that's not germane within the world of work, per se. So, you know, sometimes that's going to come up, sure. But a lot of folks out there just aren't equipped to handle that. And they see the business potential in going into coaching, but they don't really have the tools in their tool bag like a psychologist will. An industrial psychologist, we are trained to have a blend of the business background and the psychology background. So, of course, I'm going to be biased, but in my opinion, executive coaching should be primarily a field for psychologists.
It's sort of the difference between maybe a physician's assistant and the doctor.
Yeah, in most cases. There are instances where it does make sense to go to someone else if it's for a particular skill, let's say communication skills. There are communication coaches out there. Great. If it's something very specific like that, or executive presence, how to dress for success, things like that, that's a different ball of wax, and I'm all for that. And we've referred people, actually, to those coaches for those specific things. But you just buyer beware, caveat emptor. You got to know what you're getting into. And in most cases, you're better off with an IO psychologist or a clinical psychologist with this kind of background.
Now, quite interestingly, I happen to have a good friend who's a PhD industrial organizational psychologist, and he said something that I'd love to get your reaction to. He said that the psychological evaluation tests, things like 360s and DISCs and whatever that are out there, are interesting, but you can't really know a person until you talk to them.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And part of that is because no paper and pencil assessment can capture all the intricacies of a human being. I mean, we are complex creatures, and that's why we use multiple assessments, and we interview them as well, and you get to know them over time. I mean, they definitely help. They speed up the relationship. You get to quickly know someone versus what it would take a year or two to get to know them as quickly as you would with these assessments. It helps speed up that process, very important. But as I said, you need to talk to them also. I totally agree with that.
Yeah, interesting. So you have a whole blend. When you engage with a client, how do you find your clients in the first place? Do they come to you, or do you go out and find them, or how does that work?
In my case with the TurkNet Leadership Group, we've been doing this for about 25 years, so we have a pretty good reputation in the area, so a lot of times they come to us. But that doesn't mean we don't still need to market and get our name out there. That's still very important. So we go to conferences. We go to trade shows and things like that, and we have a booth just like other businesses do as well, just to kind of let them know.
Come in and get shrunk.
Yeah, come in and get shrunk, to like peanuts, 5 cents, yep. Psychological health. There you go. Well, we try to spread the word and share the gospel, if you will, and as well as to allay any fears and misconceptions about what IO psychology is.
Now, this sounds like something for giant corporations. Is it something for smaller businesses? And how small a business should consider using something like this?
We work for a variety of size organizations, really. We have small businesses with 10, 15 employees. We have large businesses. They're in the millions, if not billions, in revenue, all different sizes. There's going to be some services that might be more attractive for, say, a larger business that a smaller business might not be as attracted to. For example, maybe competency modeling, which is identifying what are the key skills and behaviors that are important for our organization and that determine and define our culture. Though I will say, even in that example, I have had some small businesses do that. So, for the most part, there's not a whole lot of differences. It really depends more on the leader and how open-minded they are and what is it they want to achieve in the short as well as the long term. Sure. We have some small businesses that have been using us for years, coaching their senior executives and working with everyone in their organization, and they're not that large at all. So really, it's a field that's open to any size organization.
Yeah, really, you know, if you have five people or more, you're probably a prospect. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely, absolutely. They may not think of it as readily as someone mm-hmm. like a large organization, but we have small clients with that size. Yes, we do.
Yeah. Well, when you think about how competitive business is today, with international pressures, you have competitors all around the globe. Technology's enabling all this. You know, can a business today expect to survive without a culture of innovation and creativity?
I think there's very few that can. I think innovation is going to be the thing that defines American industry and our hope for success in the future, because, you know, manufacturing, more and more of it's getting shipped overseas. Even though some of it's being brought back, it's being brought back because, don't laugh, robots are replacing human beings. So it's even cheaper to get a robot to build something than it is someone overseas in a foreign country. That just further exemplifies that innovation is going to be critical for the success of American industry in the future.
And that means a lot of change, and driving that change down into an organization and getting it accepted is really quite a challenge, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it really is. As I was saying earlier, we are creatures of habit. It takes a lot of energy to think through a change, right? Once we figure something out, we like to put it in autopilot so that we can just not have to worry about it so much. Thinking through a change requires a lot of energy. So change is naturally and often resisted. So that's why a psychologist can help in getting through that change, making that change more palatable, helping the organization construct a strategy for managing that change and so forth.
I've got a couple of questions for you. Okay. This sounds like a very important thing for leaders to understand, you know, in depth, you know, far more than you typically find, I suspect. Mm-hmm. Why is it that that's not taught in business school? I've got an MBA, and I don't think anybody ever said psychology to me except, you know, you're a nutcase. other than that, I don't think I ever got any closer to it. Why is that? Of course, when I went through MBA school, they were running computers with steam, but that's another story.
Uh-huh.
But I do wonder, as important as this is this being migrated into the business schools now and talk to the leaders to think about, okay, using industrial psychologists and their principles?
Some business schools are. In fact, I have some friends who are professors in business school because, frankly, business schools pay better than the Department of Psychology does. So I can't blame them for being smart and going over there. But what business schools have done, they don't want to label it psychology per se, so they call it organizational development or organizational behavior. But they do teach some of these principles. However, they only take it to a point, right? Because they got to stay practical. Mm-hmm. A lot of people they're teaching are MBAs. So they teach them the basics, give them the basic principles, and from there, they're left to go out into the world and figure it out for themselves. So oftentimes, we are working hand-in-hand with people in human resources that have that title of organizational development or organizational behavior or talent management director or things like that. But we work hand in hand with human resources. A lot of times we'll help them construct the strategies and the basic tools and processes, and then they'll go out and execute it and maintain it and keep it going. So
I wanted, before we end the session, you did bring up that business schools pay more than industrial psychology professors get. I would like to ask you, what is the future for people that are interested in this field?
Yeah, great question. If you were to look at this great product called the Occupational Network, or ONET, which is a database constructed by the Department of Labor with our tax dollars, one of the few useful things our tax dollars have produced, you will see every profession you can imagine that can be classified by the Department of Labor. And, of course, one of those is industrial and organizational psychology. You will see when you look up that profession, it is marked as one of those having a bright outlook. is considered as having a bright outlook. More and more organizations are figuring out that, hey, we could really benefit from some of the skills of an IO psychologist. So the consulting field is growing, but a lot of the large organizations are now hiring IO psychologists internally. Home Depot has a staff of IO psychologists. United Parcel Service has a staff of IO psychologists. I'm sure there's other large organizations in the area that have them. So organizations are starting to figure it out. You know, they value the services brought in, and some of them have figured out, oh, it'd be cheaper if we just had our own internally than paying consultants. So, but, you know, it's growing. It's a great field, and it's one of the few fields where you can do pretty well with a master's degree. You don't have to get the PhD. It's preferred in some instances, but I know plenty of people with a master's degree that are that have made a fine career.
Do they usually start off in with a psychology major?
Oftentimes they do, yes. They do have that general interest in psychology, and then they go into industrial psychology. Typically, people first start with the interest in psychology because they're fascinated by human behavior. Maybe they have a desire to help others, but then they figure out maybe that they're the type that would get too wrapped up in personal problems to stay objective. So something like industrial psychology is a better match for them than, say, a clinical psychologist. So
a very interesting field, and one that clearly businesses should be taking advantage of. If they want to take advantage of all the things they've heard today, how do they get in touch with you, Randy?
Well, thank you. Well, they can certainly give us a call at 770-270-1723, or they can go to our website at www.turknet, that's TURKNEETT.com, and learn more about it.
Well, that's fantastic. Thank you so much for being with us this morning. Can you remain for our other guests?
Absolutely, Chris.
Great. Yeah, great having you on.
Thank you.
Well, let's go to Girl Friday. That's G-U-R-L, which is about as well as I can spell anything. And I would like to start out with you, Victoria Hunter, and then Teresa, I'm not sure. You're sisters, right?
Yes, we are.
Yeah,
yes.
And so, why don't you both maybe take this question and come back to and tell us what a Girl Friday is, what you do, and who you work with.
Okay, Girl Friday services. Basically, a Girl Friday came from the 1940s. The Gal Friday, who was the jack of all trades. She did it all. So we're kind of, that's our concept that we're bringing to small businesses, is that we're a Girl Friday services. We offer accounting and bookkeeping services. We offer administrative support. We offer PowerPoint presentation support, PR support. We're actually working with a local radio personality that's going syndicated. So we're doing all types of different things that we offer, event planning. But really our concept is to help small businesses be successful. There are so many small businesses out there that just need someone maybe 2 hours a week, or they need someone to help them 6 hours a week. Maybe it's 6 hours a month, but they need to stay organized, but they don't know how. So that's where we come into play. That's where the Girl Friday kind of concept came from. And it just kind of was an idea, and then it kind of came to fruition when I kind of discussed it with my partner over here, and we just decided to move forward with it. So that's kind of how Girl Friday came about, and then with our backgrounds, and I'm going to let her talk a little bit more about our backgrounds and how we brought all that to the table.
Interesting. Certainly with all the outsourcing and things that are going on and people that are operating remotely.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
The world is not the same when everybody used to collect in the big building and all the support staff was there. I mean, that's distributed.
And right.
That's one thing that we do offer. We are virtual as well as we can be on site, but we have our own server. We have a cloud, so it's very easy for our clients to access, so we don't have to be with them all the time.
So, how did you get into this? You said, you sort of, saw the need and started. How has that been? You're the small business and a success story in America.
Well, we both actually, I'll go over my background and she can go over hers. I started doing bookkeeping and accounting for my father's company when I was 17 years old. And so,
child labor.
Well, actually, it was not, but no, it was great, and I really enjoyed that, and I have learned a lot of things from working with my father. He taught me a lot of things about just business in general. And in 98, I started working for a catering company as well. And so I managed the catering company. I did the bookkeeping for them. I created events. I ran the events. I cooked. I mean, I just have done a lot of things. And so after I did those, I still do some things for my father. But after that, I became a mother, and I have three children. And so it kind of slowed down a little bit. But now my kids are in school now. And so that's when we both were like, hey, let's put our backgrounds together and get this business going. We have a lot to offer. We both, she has her strengths, I have my strengths, and I think we work well together. We have a lot of things to offer.
Well, what's the other half of this story?
Well, the other half of this story is I have a very strong corporate background. I've been in the insurance industry. I also was director of operations for a company in Virginia. Also was a director with a direct selling company for many years and kind of took all of that experience and thought, you know what, I really need to be using this to help because when I was still a director with the small with the direct selling company, I just decided, you know what, this is just not working out. So I decided back in June, we decided to go ahead and move forward. Victoria was also my assistant when I had the direct selling company, or when I was working for them. And I just decided to take all that background, all the financial background, all the insurance background, all the office management background, the human resources background, everything that I had over the years and use it to help small businesses to thrive. Because in our economy and everything that's going on, the only way this country is going to survive is off of small businesses and us supporting them and helping them move forward and showing them ways to grow efficiently and effectively. So
we've also had the opportunity to help a few companies to start their businesses.
Right.
We have a lot of great ideas that we've been able to share with them and help them find direction, where they want to go, how to promote themselves, how to market themselves, advertise. So,
and do it with a reasonable budget.
Right,
right,
yeah.
Right.
Interestingly enough, you know, what is direct sales?
Direct sales is like Pampered Chef, Tupperware, Mary Kay Cosmetics. All those are direct selling companies.
No wonder I don't know what it is.
Well, all the direct selling companies out there. That's basically where you are an independent contractor for them or a consultant, and then you're actually selling on their you're selling their product by hosting parties and those types of things.
Yeah, if it didn't go in a microwave oven, I wouldn't know what it is.
So that's a direct selling company. But that before that, I was definitely here in the Atlanta area. I was in insurance for 10 years and then worked at a rather large insurance company down in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And then when we were in Virginia, I actually was the director of human resources and director of operations for a company. I've also worked locally as a business manager for another large uniform company. So definitely taking all of that background, and that's kind of what I'm trying to utilize to throw out there to different people.
So there are so many businesses that, you know, I mean, I'll tell you frankly, my bookkeeping would consist of a sack.
You're our favorite client.
Yes.
I have a few working brain cells, and I did hire a person who does something very similar to what you do.
Good.
Yeah, you know, and it's probably the only reason I'm not doing the perp walk down to the big house with
it's
IRS.
True. It's true. I mean,
we try to work with CPAs because the part that we do, they do not like to do. So it works well together to partner up with CPAs because they don't like to do the bookkeeping part.
And you can probably help a business that's, a small business. I mean, you don't need to hire all these people a lot of times.
Correct.
You really can't keep them busy all day.
Right.
And you have to pay a lot of money to get this kind of experience. So doesn't having someone like you that can come in and help them organize things and bring in the knowledge and things that you've gained from, both working in your father's business and working for other companies to help them, put in procedures and things like that.
Yes. Yes. That's kind of where we come into play, especially with the small businesses. Like, I've got one client right now, I'm working with him, and I'm actually bringing in standard operating procedures. We're starting to implement forms. We're starting to kind of gather data that we need to have. We're getting the financials under control. I'm trying to make sure that he's moving in the right direction, and I'm really excited because we're already starting to see it turn the corner. He's excited. I'm excited about what is happening. Victoria is working with another client, and I'm going to let her tell you a little bit more about her, about that company. But we both are trying to work with small businesses to help them move forward, but economically.
So. And reasonably, because, the business model has changed out there today, hasn't
yes.
it?
Yes, it has. Very much so.
Yeah, that's one thing people have really accepted and understand the concept that we're trying to present, and they really have grasped the concept and like what we're trying to offer.
We've got people wanting to come and work for us already. we've even had people talk to us about purchasing the business and franchising it. It's just an amazing concept that I didn't know that there was such a need for it. I did research first before I kind of went into the business, but mm-hmm. I decided that after doing the research and just talking to several different close business acquaintances that I really value their opinions, then I thought, you know what, we need to move forward with this because this is definitely something that we need to do. We have a networking event that we do every month. And everybody's just crazy about the idea. They're like, oh my gosh, I need you for this. And can you help me with that? And can you get my constant contact and get all my contacts transferred over so that I can send out my weekly and monthly newsletters? It's just amazing, the stuff. And people are like, oh my gosh, I need this, I need that. And we're both going, okay, well, just give us a call and we'll see what we can do. And then we're going, okay, who can we call to help us with all of this? But that's kind of what our concept is. So,
So it's been, you validated that it's a valuable service and that it's needed and people understand it and understand they can buy it a la carte. Sort of just like you buy software as a service, you would buy all these ancillary services that really make the wheels of business stay on the wagon, a la carte as well.
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
We're both going to
right twice in a row.
Right, exactly. One of the things that I really try to do, and she does too, is we kind of look at the project. We're looking at the project and getting a value for it. It's a small project, it's going to be one fee. If it's a larger project or we're going to be doing it on an ongoing basis, that's another fee. Mm-hmm. So it's really just trying to determine, everybody's like, well, what's your rate? Well, I need to come and sit down with you. Mm-hmm. The consultation's free. Mm-hmm. We usually sit down and we talk about, okay, what are your needs? What direction are you going in? What is it how do you see us fitting into the picture so that we can actually understand before we, come to any kind of agreement mm-hmm. on, and of course they're signing an agreement with us as a contractor. We're not going on payroll with anyone. Mm-hmm. And like you said, it's a la carte. It's really what you need.
It's all contract labor. We're independent.
Yeah. And you avoid all the complications of of having employees and all that sort of thing. And for all you people out there who are looking at the new healthcare laws and trying to stay under that magic number of 50, you probably could think about something like this.
It's not an issue for us. Yes.
Right. It's not an issue for us. And what's great is a lot of those companies are outsourcing. Yeah. No, a lot of the companies that were larger than that have downsized those administrative staff. And they're outsourcing that, and that's where we come into play.
Right.
And that's why we said, you may not need an admin for 40 hours a week. You may need someone 6 hours a week, and you were filling her in to do other things.
Right.
And that's usually what was happening. And not that, I don't want anyone to be out of a job, but there's other ways that you can take care of those things. One of the great things, too, with being virtual, you would not believe how many people are just so excited about that because I may have to go in once a week or I may have to go in once a month and just get information, gather data. But with all the technology, mm-hmm. it is so different than when I was coming up through the ranks, as I call it. And I was at, I don't know how I would live without my cell phone now, and without email and all the things that we have. It's just a different concept now.
Right. Interestingly enough, in the face of all of that change, Yahoo is bringing all the people back in from the virtual world.
Right.
I thought that was kind of interesting. Something must have really happened to make them determined that they needed to bring people back to the office. You know, that's just, I read the article and I'm like going, wow, okay. Yeah. Let's see how long that lasts.
Yeah. You know, that's probably a question I should have asked you, Randy. You want to chime in on that one?
Yeah, definitely.
There is a lot of chatter, if you will, about that issue right now. And I've read a number of different opinions, but my concern on that issue is that, especially out on the West Coast, that is almost blasphemous what they did, I think. A lot of people are going to be upset. I understand what she's doing, but my goodness, there's so much technology out there, and Yahoo being a technology company, you can foster collaboration. How about instant messaging? You can talk to people anytime you want. Just IM them. And with email and everything else, I mean, how much value is there just hanging around a water cooler?
Video conferencing, there's FaceTime, Skype, there's so many different avenues. I mean, you can literally see someone sitting in their office, so you know that if you need to talk to them, they're there. But I think what was happening, there was a lot of abuse going on where they weren't there the problem. And they weren't accessible and they weren't answering emails. And that was what was going in. Well, then you deal with it a different way. I can't imagine bringing all those people back.
Right.
I would hate to be there the day that they all had to show up.
Right.
I mean, seriously, that would be not a good thing. But, I mean, from your standpoint, I mean, psychologically, it's probably very stressful for an employee that thinks they have to go back in.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of people, they choose telecommuting for various reasons related to the long commute, child care, elder care needs, and things of that nature. So absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't make changes like that on a whim. And I wonder how many industrial organizational psychologists you've got rich, and will get rich trying to make this work.
Yeah, no kidding. Only the future will tell. But I hope it's not a bad decision. I hope she knows what she's doing. Yeah. We only can speculate looking from the outside in. But it is an interesting move, to say the least.
It seems like, if you have a, quote, creativity issue and innovation issue, that putting people in a box they don't want to be in is probably the wrong, would strike me as probably not your best first move.
Yeah, I agree. Many people in that field in IT, they're a lot like artists. They look at their code as their form of art, and they don't like to be put in a box. They don't like to have a lot of restrictions put on them. So I can't imagine this is going to be received very favorably.
Well said. So back to Girl Friday. I'm very interested in where do you see your business being in another year?
Huge.
Yeah. That's what we're hoping.
That's what we're hoping for. We're actually looking to grow it in all different areas. Like I'd said, we have another sister that's in North Georgia, and she is already talking to us about expanding that area, maybe going into Dalton, Chattanooga, those types of areas, and kind of offering the same type of thing because the concept is so new. In a year, somebody comes to us and says, hey, we want to purchase you and
let's
franchise the business. Well, that's also an option. We're kind of looking to move into all different types of areas, bringing on people that maybe can help us with all the data entry, the things that are going on behind the scenes that, when the work is given to us, that we're able to expand on it behind the scenes. One of the things that I really enjoy doing is going out and meeting different people and hearing about different businesses and bringing those types of businesses in.
She loves to network.
I love to network. So, huge networker, and she's starting to love it too. So,
no, I do enjoy it. It's been a lot of fun going to all of the networking events.
I don't know how much y'all network. I mean, we haven't done any conferences or trade shows, but we really do a lot of networking, and especially here in the Atlanta area. And it's the Atlanta area's networking groups are really starting to grow. And the one that we just really enjoy doing that we do every month, it has just grown and grown and grown. And if anyone is wanting to grow a small business, we even recommend that to small businesses that we're helping. What type of networking are you doing? Are you in a networking group? Where are you getting your leads from? How are you getting out there and being seen? Those types of things. And one of the things I recommend is networking.
Yes.
And very, very strongly, because that's how I grew my direct selling business, my direct sales business, and then how I've grown this business. Because the minute I opened my mouth in one of my networking meetings about what I was planning to do, everyone was like, you need to do this. It'll be great for you, and I need your services. I mean, I had clients within 2 days after I opened my mouth about it. So,
and that's the great thing about that. We have so many different clients that have different needs, and one of our clients actually has 2 radio talk shows, and we're managing her. And so I'm putting together PowerPoint presentations to present to nonprofit organizations. We're putting together advertising packages, sponsorship packages, that type of thing. So, I mean, we do it all. We can...
networking is how you're finding your customers.
Yes.
And word of mouth. A lot of word of mouth.
A lot of word of mouth. A lot of that. And those word of mouths are coming from my my networking peeps, mm-hmm. as I call them. And that's where it's coming from. And then that it just goes from there. I mean, we're on Facebook, and we're also on, we also have a website and everything, but it seems as though it's a lot of word of mouth, and that's because the experiences that they've had with me and with her in the past or currently. So that's
just
always...
the networking events.
Yes.
I mean, it's really interesting that people are putting people, you know, into business and helping them grow. And the old Madison Avenue, you know, driven... advertising is not how it's being done. It's you know, all a pull thing and a recommendation thing, which is probably why social media is so important today.
Right. Yes.
And social media, for all of those out there who don't think about it right, is another way to think of it is you can run, but you can't hide from a bad reputation anymore. But you can take a great advantage of a good reputation because that's how people trust what people are saying about you.
Right.
What you
right.
say about you is blah, blah, blah. What other people say about you is you're reliable. So, if people want to get in touch with the girl Friday, how do they do that?
They can give us a call at 770-315-8613, or you can reach us on the internet at www.girlfridayservices.com. And girl is spelled G-U-R-L because we're your office divas. And, you know, to be a diva, you got to have a diva name. So that's where the girl, G-U-R-L, came from. Again, it's www.girlfridayservices.com.
Well, Teresa, Victoria, thank you so much for
thank
being on.
Much.
And we look forward
thank
to having
you
back.
Okay,
and for all of those listening and as well as the people in the station, if you know a business who has a great story, is growing, and would like to get their story told in Atlanta, have them drop us a line at the station. We'd love to talk to them and get them on the air.